Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Sports Radio 610 presents
Payne and Pendergast,
presented by Allied Home Security.
Jose Altuve had his 10-year anniversary as a Major League Baseball player as a Houston Astro last night. He celebrated with two home runs in his first two at-bats. He said that the fan support means a lot to him.
They're probably the biggest reason why we go out there and play every day. We have the best fans in baseball. They support us every day, every year. And you know, it means a lot to me to get all the support and all the love we get from them.
So that's Jose Altuve. As I was watching Jose Altuve last night, Seth, hit those home runs and watching the videos of him celebrating various milestones in his career, you know, in sports nowadays, it's tough to envision a guy being a career player in a certain uniform. Because just things change, you know, and teams, you know, teams get worse. So guys want to go play for contenders at the end. That's why JJ Watt is not here anymore. You know, it's normal in sports for some guys just, you know, they don't get attached to a city or a team or a fan base as much as other guys do. Jose Altuve is one guy. As I'm watching these milestones last night, I'm like, Jim Crane, I think if there's one guy that Jim Crane is going to keep in an Astros uniform, even if he has to overpay to do it, it's going to be Jose Altuve. Jose Altuve is the greatest player in the history of this franchise, in my opinion.
Like, honestly, at some point, I feel like I understand now why Lakers fans were okay with Kobe Bryant's ridiculously stupid
great analogy. Contract. That's a great analogy.
If Altuve got a ridiculously unreasonable, exorbitant last contract, like after he was definitely over the hill, I'd be like, yep, okay, that's what you got to do. Yeah, that's fine. Yep, do it. And I'd be cool with it. It doesn't make any rational sense. It's not the smart thing to do. And I don't think it's going to come to that at some point. But that's what he is. And Sean, last night, as you know, I like to do, I like to flip over to the opposing team's broadcast.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah.
I watch it on my computer when I can, a little VPN action.
Yep.
And I was actually pleasantly surprised. It was after Altuve's second home run, I believe, where they spent a long time trying to figure out whether it was a foul or not. And it was annoying me because it hit the damn pole.
Yep.
So, but then they started talking about the cheating scandal. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, as far as I could tell, it was a three-person booth. And as far as I could tell, it seemed like they were pretty unanimous that they didn't think the cheating scandal would or should affect Jose Altuve at all.
That's nice.
They were having a nice little debate about actually whether they even cared that much about it. The guy, I don't know who their former pro was on there, but he was kind of just saying, like, look, this goes back forever. They've been doing, you know, stories about the White Sox blinking lights in the outfield.
Yep.
And everything.
Yep.
And they weren't, you know, they weren't saying that there was no guilt or no blame or anything like that, but they were kind of brushing it aside. And I think that once you get off of social media and when you get away from, you know, people grandstanding about things, I think by and large within baseball and within even the players themselves, it's a story that's long in the past, and I don't think many people believe the buzzer stuff at all. And Altuve this season is really doing a great job of showing exactly what he was before 2017. Yeah. through 2019 isn't any different than what he's been. They actually, the other thing I thought about when the Indians broadcasters were talking about the cheating scandal was, wow, these guys don't actually know all that much about the cheating scandal.
really?
No, like they brought up that you know, Altuve may not have participated in it at all.
Yeah.
And the only evidence they cited was that Carlos Correa has been adamant that Jose Altuve didn't participate.
Would you you're saying if they had cited that Tony Adams study that actually had statistical evidence of it?
Yeah, they didn't cite that, or even just like some of the other, you know, some of the other, the Tony Adams statistical evidence, the videos that back it up.
Some
of the studies that Fangraphs has done,
yep.
All those things where they show which guys probably did and which guys probably didn't based on their pitch selection and all of that. Or the fact that Altuve was so much better on the road that season than at home. Like they didn't, but even without having all that information and knowledge, they basically all just brushed aside the notion that Altuve's long-term legacy would be affected. So that was refreshing to hear from another team's broadcasting team.
Yeah, that's interesting. And no, that is good because that's, you know, I don't know if Jose Altuve is having to win hearts and minds back everywhere, but you know, this, he's 10 years in now, and this is something that, you know, there's going to be a sanctimonious portion of the voting constituency if and when the time comes that he's eligible for the Hall of Fame who are going to bring this up. You know, they're going to bring this up as a thing.
They'll, you know, it's the kind of thing that isn't going to keep him out of the Hall of Fame, but you wonder if, you know, by the time Jose Altuve retires, maybe by any other measure he should be a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Right, right.
And it'll keep... it'll keep some guys, perhaps. Maybe they'll say, well, we don't know for sure, so I'm just going to hold off this year and then we'll do it next year.
It's their version of the commissioner's exempt list is what that is, keeping guys out on the first ballot. Like, he won't go in on the first, but he'll go in on the third ballot. Seth, the thing that surprises me when it comes to nights like that for Jose Altuve, when I get on social media, and it's not the first time I did this, but last night was appropriate to do, that I think someone had tweeted like that they did a video tribute to him. Last night to celebrate his 10-year anniversary with the team with all the milestones and the highlights and so forth. And I retweeted, I said, as they should, he's the greatest player in franchise history. I'm surprised how little pushback I get on that. You know, this is a team that has two very recent Hall of Famers that have gone in the last 4 or 5 years, Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell, and Nolan Ryan, who's a Hall of Famer who played for a bunch of different teams, but I think is viewed by a lot of Astro fans as their guy. Because he's from Alvin, Texas, they view him, you know, he's one of the 34s. Him and Olajuwon and Earl Campbell, Nolan Ryan is royalty here. I get, in my mind, and I, you know, I'm not somebody who ignores my replies. I get notified when certain people reply. I look at them. I have my tweet deck open during games and stuff like that. I get very little pushback on the declaration that Jose Altuve is the greatest Astro of all time. I'm a little surprised by that.
I think at least part of that comes down to simply a World Series victory, mm-hmm. and you know, which I know that's a team thing. But B, part of that is playoff performances.
Yes.
You know, and just by breadth and quality of playoff performances, Altuve's got everybody else beat hands down, you know, from historical Astros. So I think that's probably you're not going to get a whole lot of pushback from people.
He's also likable. You know what I mean? Like there's certain guys, and I'm not saying Biggio or Bagwell or Nolan Ryan aren't likable. I'm not saying that at all. Jose Altuve is somebody who is personality wise likable, and he's got an amazing story. His story's incredible. He's the ultimate underdog.
That, you know, the other thing, he was asked something about proving people wrong or something, and it said one of the best things ever, which is he likes proving people right.
Yeah.
So, like, for the people that believed in him or the people that are on his side, he likes proving them right. That's what a great way to think about life and to go through the world. Like, instead of having a chip on your shoulder, like, just feeling an obligation to do right by those who do right by you.
Yeah,
what a concept.
That was in his, that was his pregame availability yesterday. I saw that too. He was just sitting in the dugout chopping it up. That was good stuff. Other good stuff. Alex Bregman ran the bases yesterday, Seth. How about that? You excited about Alex Bregman running the bases before the game?
I'm excited about it. I'm honestly getting a little bit agitated just because I expected him to be out in Albuquerque right about now. Yeah. It felt like before the All-Star break, it felt like, oh boy, he's just been right after the All-Star break, he'll be back. So Maybe agitated is not the right word. I'm getting impatient.
Well, here's where I got a little agitated. Jay Kaplan tweeted this yesterday. Jay Kaplan covers the Astros for The Athletic. He said, Alex Bregman ran the bases today at a higher intensity. He said afterwards he felt great. He'll do that a few more times, which should be the last step before a minor league rehab assignment. It was this follow-up tweet where I'm like, okay, this feels a little like coddling. But whatever, I'll read it here. Bregman estimated he'll need somewhere between 15 to 30 at-bats once out on his rehab assignment. A lot will depend on how much running he does in those at-bats. And I'm like, are you kidding me? So he's got to run the bases four extra times, so that's going to be another week he's got to come back? What are you doing?
Look, if I had to run 90 feet, that's one thing. But I had to run 270 feet, my God. It's almost like, Sean, it's almost like the better he performs, the less likely he's to come back.
Right, Seth.
Because like, oh, I hit three triples. We got to push it back. That's way too much running.
I favorited this tweet in a bookmark fashion to read this specifically on the air with you. Seth, as someone who has had enough surgeries to where you've basically been put back together like Frankenstein, what's your reaction when you see a baseball player going, my rehab assignment will depend on how much I got to run the bases in 15 to 30 at-bats?
I don't know. My first reaction, honestly, with Bregman was like, I don't know if he was being sarcastic or not. Until you got to actually see the video and see if he's got
good
like
point.
A wry
that's
little
a good,
smile
that's a, that's
on
a
his
fair,
face.
That's a fair point. You're absolutely
right. He might have just been making that very joke that I just did.
Yeah.
And the other is that he also, Bregman's got those stubby little legs, and it is kind of taxing for him to have to run around the base fast. He's got a unique build, so it was like for him to run 270 feet, it's kind of like somebody else running 540 feet.
He's making
twice as many churning little steps. He's like one of those little cartoons where the legs are just a blur.
Make him sound like Peter Dinklage.
He's talked about it himself. He's got these tiny little legs.
Tyrion rounding first and heading for second.
Hey, just real quick, just in case somebody was thought I was just talking unsubstantiated crap or anything about Jose Altuve in the postseason.
Yeah,
Craig Biggio in the postseason, 40 games, OPS of 618.
Yeah, not good.
Jeff Bagwell, 33 games, OPS of 685.
Yep, we lived it.
Jose Altuve, 63 games, OPS of 942.
Biggio and Bagwell in the postseason have basically been really good hitting pitchers in the National League. You know what I mean? They'd be the equivalent of like an 8 or a 9 hole hitter in the National League. Jose Altuve has been an MVP level hitter.
His OPS in the postseason is actually better than his OPS in the regular season.
In a gigantic sample size.
Yeah.
I mean, 63 postseason games?
It's a 2020 regular season.
And then some!
I was like, if anybody ever wants to bring up the 2020 regular season, be like, okay, how about when he, in all of his playoff games, in the same number of games, he was actually better than his regular season average. There
Unbelievable.
You go.
Unbelievable. All right, John McClain joins us in studio in the 8 o'clock hour, so looking forward to seeing the general in person again. Do we believe Nick Saban? Nick Saban gave an estimate yesterday of his quarterback's endorsement money. We know college players can now make money off of their name, image, and likeness. So a lot of these kids are getting endorsement deals. The number that Nick Saban threw out there yesterday is going to blow your mind. We'll have it for you next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better.
because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, real quick, I'm just going to point this out because we just got done talking about Alex Bregman coming back, and several of you on the text page have made a great point. And this is where context matters. When you get boxed in with 280 characters, you start to read things the way you read them and the way you view them, as opposed to maybe how they're meant. I read Jay Kaplan's tweet where it talked about Alex Bregman estimating he'll need somewhere between 15 to 30 at-bats once he's on his rehab assignment. A lot will depend on how much running he does in those at-bats. Of course, my brain immediately went to, oh, this coddled baseball player, he's going to do too much running on the... Several of you have pointed out, and I think it's a good point. That's why I want to bring it up here, just to put a bow on this. I'll read this one, Seth. So I took Bregman's quote a little differently than y'all. Him saying it depends on how many bases he has to run, meaning he needs to run a lot of bases to test out his legs to make sure he's actually ready to return. In other words, if he gets there and he strikes out a bunch of times and he really doesn't know how well the quad is doing, if he gets down there and he has 10 at-bats and he's getting hits, he's grounding out, he's having to really test the quad, well, he may know then after 10 or 15 at-bats, okay, I'm ready to go back to Minute Maid Park now.
I feel like you were a bad influence on me on that one, Sean.
Yeah, I think
and,
I was.
And not that I even really took it all that seriously. The fact that I entertained it at all makes me sick about myself. First you tried to tempt me into removing Altuve from the circle of trust yesterday.
I did. I've been a bad influence on you lately.
You might have a Brandy Payne drop coming, by the way. an imitation of Sean Pendergast.
Oh, really?
Jose Altuve.
Yes.
Yeah. It may or may not.
Holy, hold up. Did I anger Brandy?
Oh God, yeah. Remember the last time I had skirted, like, I think I had Jose Altuve straddle the circle of trust at some point earlier in the year.
What happened in your household that day?
No, well, I'll just say this. Not a whole lot for a couple of weeks.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want
services withheld.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't want to anger Brandy. Like, I respect your opinion on things, Seth. I really respect Brandy's opinion on things. She's a very learned sports fan, man.
So Bregman, I guess the only thing I would worry about with Bregman, and I'm not really worried about it, is, you know, you can remember Correa came back in late July one year, or was it early August? And it seemed like it took him until September to really get it going.
Yeah.
Bregman, you know, like anybody else, can have a hard time coming back sometimes from extended departures. So is he going to come back quickly, or is he going to come back slowly when he actually gets back on the major league diamond?
Right.
And does that affect this? What is it? Is it still 3.5 games over the A's right
yes,
now?
Yes, yes.
The 3.5 game lead over the A's.
Yeah, I think so. It was 3.5 going into last night, so I don't know. I didn't see what the A's did last night, but it's at least 3.5. So, yeah. I'm not worried. I'm really not worried about Bregman. So, Seth, you and I talked pretty extensively yesterday. The A's, by the way, won last night. 6-0 they won over the Angels.
Cheaters.
We talked a lot yesterday about the new rules in place that allow collegiate athletes to benefit financially from their name, image, and likeness. Nick Saban yesterday was speaking at a coaching convention, the Texas High School Coaches Association. On Tuesday, he was speaking there, and he raised some eyebrows when he was asked about name, image, and likeness rules. Within his answer, he revealed that his quarterback, Bryce Young, who has yet to start a game in Alabama, is doing pretty damn well for himself in the new era of college athletics. Do we believe this quote from Nick Saban, Seth? He said, quote, "Our QB has already approached ungodly numbers, and he hasn't even played yet. If I told you what it is, it's almost seven figures."
Seven figures.
So according to Nick Saban, Bryce Young is damn near a millionaire right now.
That's crazy. I guess he didn't specify whether he was including figures after the decimal point or not. But yeah. I guess it was a shock at first, and this is one of those things that's a shock because you've never thought about it before, but it took about 7 seconds for it to feel like, yeah, that probably makes about sense. That makes sense because for a couple of reasons. And by the way, I think whenever I hear about people making an exorbitant amount of monies right now, I'm supposed to say something about the way Amazon treats its employees. So there you go. I can't believe that they're paying Bryce. They're going to pay him $1 million, but Amazon employees. So if you think about a college town, to make it more applicable, let's say Austin. Austin's a lot bigger than
Tuscaloosa.
Tuscaloosa, thank you. The state of Alabama doesn't have a pro football team.
Right.
So if you just think about the state of Alabama or the city of Austin,
yeah,
where obviously, if you go listen to sports radio talk in Austin, it's a whole lot more college football talk in Austin, as you might expect. You know, here in Houston, because we have LSU, A&M, Texas, University of Houston, it's a lot harder to talk college football without turning off a whole lot of other fan bases. But in a city like Austin, you have a whole lot of people listening to sports radio, watching television news, looking at the internet about college football. And yet, unlike an NFL city, there's just simply zero marketplace for businesses to capitalize on any of that attention, to purchase advertising and leverage all of that talk to their own benefit other than sponsoring the University of Texas or sponsoring the Longhorns, where now all of a sudden you've got that ability.
Yeah.
In a city like Austin or the entire state of Alabama, there are businesses that would love to have an athlete endorse their product, but it doesn't make financial sense to have, Dak Prescott or somebody do it.
Right.
But it makes a whole lot more sense to have a local quarterback do it. So I think from a business standpoint, there's untapped potential there that's now being tapped. And then you add on to that the fact that a lot of those business people are University of Alabama alums or Texas X's or their Aggies or what have you. And that's where things could get really crazy. You've got business opportunity on top of actual alumni pride.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring that up, the nature of so many of these schools being in a town where there's nothing else, or even in a state where there's nothing else, like Nebraska. The University of Nebraska, I know they're not great right now, but they are like the professional football team of the state of Nebraska. And so then I think about here, right? Cities like Houston, cities like, Nashville, where Vanderbilt is, other big cities where there are other opportunities. LA, USC, if you're a USC athlete, do you feel like you're gonna get endorsement opportunities when you have so many other potential spokespeople in a city like that? I get thinking about Houston and the University of Houston, and when these rules came out, Seth, about name, image, and likeness, was this something that Tillman Fertitta began to salivate over? The opportunity to...
Oh, gosh.
He's basically like the owner of University of Houston Athletics. You know what I mean?
It's weird. It does seem like he's the owner.
Is this something that he is kind of... Is he looking at this as an opportunity? Or can athletes even speak for Landry's, Tillman's empire, because it has sports betting involved with it?
Oh, well, I guess the brands, they would have to isolate the various brands because those are separate. I bet they're separate. They're not separate entities.
They're all part of his
empire. Listen, if there are restrictions, Sean, I know they're part of his empire, but the businesses themselves can be separate entities,
sure,
even though they're under the umbrella of something else. I don't. Yeah, it probably makes it more complicated, but I'm figuring Tillman could figure it a way out. I think that what Tillman is going to want to know first and foremost is, wait a second, is there a luxury tax on this? What's our how much are we allowed to spend on? Boy, could that be enough to really tilt the balance for University of Houston, to where they already do so well recruiting local kids, if they could really, especially for, this is going to be the key, and this is where the arms race is going to get interesting, Sean.
Mm-hmm.
The star athletes, the quarterback making seven figures, all of that stuff, yeah, that makes sense. The schools that somehow figure out a way to get offensive linemen and, you know, inside linebackers, or the more nondescript, the nose tackle perhaps, like the more nondescript players paid, that might end. And now, technically, it's not the schools doing it, everybody. It's not the schools. It's the business people around them. But some of these boosters are also the, you know, business people. So, yeah, that might be an edge that they have in some of these circumstances.
Yeah, and then you go to the next level with that, Seth. Okay, there's clearly a delineation between potential spokespeople and non-potential spokespeople, just in terms of their background or the position they play or how good a player they are. Could this become something that gets divisive in a locker room? You know what I mean? If Bryce Young is making $1 million a year, and then the guys all protecting him combined make $25,000 protecting him, is that something that becomes an issue in a collegiate locker room?
I think that I've got two answers to that, Sean,
okay,
in succession. One is, yes, I think it's certainly possible. And two is, who cares? Like, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, in life, are there disparities in income in businesses or on teams or what have you? I mean, this is something, again, I'll go with football. I'll say something that I've said a lot of times before when it comes to people wringing their hands over amateurism and whatnot. Is this not already the case in minor league baseball, in minor league hockey, you know, in the G League, in the NBA? I mean, in minor league baseball, there are guys on teams who have gotten multi-million-dollar signing bonuses playing alongside other guys who got a $10,000 signing bonus in Latin America and, you know, literally have like a few shirts and no other possessions in life.
It is, but this is the first time this dynamic has existed in football.
Right. So it'll happen, and yeah, there'll be maybe that it creates issues and everything, but like, is that going to be the thing that all of a sudden becomes impossible for teams to get by? Like, it's an extra challenge that you have to work through.
Yeah. Yeah.
I see people talking about that, like how this could never work or something because oh my gosh, some guys will be upset or jealous. Like, yeah, that's life. People get jealous. People get upset. Deal with it.
Yeah, yeah. I guess the angle I'm coming at it from would be if I were rooting for a team. You know what I mean? If I were an Alabama fan and I'm seeing that Bryce Young is getting seven figures, awesome for Bryce Young. Boy, I sure hope that's not the thing. I already got to worry about Bill O'Brien being my offensive coordinator, all right? I don't need to worry about my offensive lineman not wanting to protect my quarterback because he's making 200 times what they're making in NIL stuff.
So really what you have to worry about is how is my team going to deal with it or handle it better than other teams?
100%. Yeah, yeah, that's
like
the angle
Bryce Young going to – yeah, because then – oh, boy. Sean, okay. Here's the other whiplash thing that you hadn't really thought about. Okay, what are the rules and regulations on gifts from fellow athletes in the NCAA? Because this is still – remember, this isn't the school paying players.
Yeah.
This is people from outside the school paying players to use their name, image, and likeness. What is the rule on an actual – because I don't think it comes up a whole lot.
Bryce
What's the rule on Bryce Young, you know, given his offensive lineman bonuses and whatnot?
Bryce Young will be the first college quarterback to buy Breitling watches for his offensive lineman like he's an NFL quarterback or Segways.
And they might end up suspended because of it.
It's the wild, wild west right now. I don't think the NCAA has thought through a lot of this stuff. I think they just said, oh, the courts are starting to make laws in some of these states. I guess we better do something.
The NCAA basically went, and I was listening to Andrew Brandt talk about this, because Andrew Brandt, former executive for the Packers, is on a lot of these committees. He's been talking to this, like been trying to work things out and explore stuff for like 3 years.
Yeah.
This latest ruling from the Supreme Court came down, and that's kind of how Andrew Brandt characterized it. The NCAA said, and they shoved it out.
Fine.
Wait a second, Judge Roberts,
right.
I supported him. Oh, damn.
They railed against it for 100 years and then decided in a week just to change everything. It's crazy. All right, are we entering a new era? Speaking of quarterbacks, are we entering a new era of diva quarterback in the NFL? Who will be next year's Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson? That's next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, big story that came down in the middle of the show yesterday, and we'll talk about this with John McClain in the 8 o'clock hour when he joins us in studio, was Aaron Rodgers, according to Adam Schefter, turning down a 2-year extension from the Green Bay Packers that would have made him the highest paid quarterback in the NFL and kept him in Green Bay for 5 more seasons, or at least on paper would have made him a Packer for 5 more seasons, according to Adam Schefter, who then declared, Schefter did, that, well, clearly it's not about money then. Okay. So Seth and I went into that. Diana Rossini retweeted the news on Aaron Rodgers yesterday. Diana Rossini, also of ESPN. And she tweeted something else that got me thinking about these quarterbacks. But she retweeted the Aaron Rodgers news, and her retweet was, "There is no price tag on feeling valued and appreciated. It's just life." And I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. Yeah, because he's getting paid like a hobo right now. Poor Aaron Rodgers. Are you kidding me? And I like Diana Rossini. I think she does a great job. I really enjoy her. I think she's good on TV. I think she's a really good reporter. But when there is no price tag on feeling valued and appreciated. Oh, my
God. Yeah, there kind of is. Yeah.
but do we feel like Aaron Rodgers is being neither valued nor appreciated?
He's been disrespected. He's been, I go back and forth because there's times where I get upset that I feel like the Green Bay front office gets a little bit more credit than they deserve sometimes. But then I also feel like Aaron Rodgers, like at this stage in your life, and I would have said the same thing to Brett Favre, man, you're acting kind of LeBron-like, you know, like you're setting yourself apart from like the whole business model to a point where if you think where you need to go for love and acceptance is your employer,
right?
Then good luck with that working out for you. Yeah. If you're looking for a spreadsheet to show you your love and respect and acceptance and all those other soft and fuzzy terms, then so be it. And just don't always think that the grass is greener on the other side. There are these front offices are populated by the same people. They're number-crunching, hyper-motivated, somewhat egotistical folks. And I'm not saying that in a bad way or anything. That's just what they are.
Yep.
And when you go down from any one front office to the next in the league, you're going to find much of the same. That's not where you should be looking for your validation. That's what annoys me more than anything else about Aaron Rodgers. It's that there's so much, Sean. there's so much about playing for the Green Bay Packers that is so different and is so special and so unique compared to anywhere else in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And you would not get that experience except in a few of the old guard franchises,
right.
You know? And they're each unique, but whether you're talking about the Raiders, the Cowboys, the Packers, but I think the Packers especially, it's almost like the closest to a collegiate environment you can get in the NFL with the Green Bay Packers. But it's his petty differences with Brian Gutekunst that's allowing him to not just affect, look, because if Diana Russini wants to talk about all the soft stuff, not the money or anything like that, if you want to talk about, I want a general manager who's going to spoon me all night and tell me everything's going to be just fine.
Right.
Like that's what you're foregoing all of that other stuff because of your petty difference with Brian Gutekunst.
Right.
Gutekunst made a decision that you think is bad. How about removing yourself from the equation for a moment? And at the very least, because again, remember, it's not about the money. Oh, if it's not about the money, if it's about love and respect and respecting me as an individual, all right, if we're in that territory, what are you doing to your teammates right now?
Yeah.
What are you doing to those guys? You know, what are you doing to the fans in Green Bay? All of that stuff, all because of your petty difference with Brian Gutekunst. I don't like bringing up Aaron Rodgers' rift with his family because who knows what goes on with stuff
sure.
like that. But now I'm starting to think, all right, you know what? I would not be surprised if Aaron Rodgers' rift with various people in his personal and professional life has a whole lot to do with him being more sensitive than your average bear.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. No, you're right. We don't know, but that's absolutely in play. No question about that. I just these ESPN people that are carrying the water for Aaron Rodgers right now is crazy.
Yeah. I don't know. The other thing, too, is some of these NFL writers, like, they might as well just hand their phones over to the agents and let the agents write the tweets
yes.
for them.
Yes.
You know, whenever they start talking about practical guarantees or how it's not about the money with Aaron Rodgers, it's just let the agent write the tweet. Just
right.
go ahead. Have him, you can be the ghostwriter for him. Just take a statement from the agent and add a couple pronouns here, a couple adjectives there, and then boom. It's an Adam Schefter special.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I mean, you think about the role that a Schefter or a Russini are supposed to play. Opinion is not supposed to be at the top of the list of things they're supposed to be injecting into this stuff. You're like, I read that tweet from Diana Russini, and now where she says you can't put a value on or you can't put a price on being valued and appreciated. I'm thinking, okay, every report that now comes from her about things to do with Aaron Rodgers. We know whose side she's on in this whole thing. You know what I mean? And I guess maybe she's showing her cards and we get, in some ways, there's some honesty attached to that. I just disagree with her. I guess it's more than anything else. He's valued and appreciated. He's been one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league for a team that's been really, really good.
I've told you this before, Sean, but it's like, and this is the part that it's understandable. You know, how Aaron Rodgers might have his feelings hurt or what have you. But I just, like, from a personal perspective, when I played for the Jaguars, Gary Walker and I were the starting defensive tackles. And we've been in the playoffs several years.
Mm-hmm.
The Texans 1 year draft Marcus Stroud, their first overall pick. Not the first overall, their first pick.
The Jags, you mean?
The Jaguars, sorry. So it was like, okay. They drafted a defensive tackle in the first round. Like, my job's on the line. And it was extra motivation. I was a guy that was always one of the harder working guys on a team. Coaches loved me, all that stuff. But it was extra motivation. And I ended up having the best season of my career. And it was still hard, even after that, to admit that extra motivation mattered. Because you want to believe that, like, nope, I'm going to work just as hard no matter what. I'm going to be just as driven. But that extra little bit of chip on your shoulder always helps. You know, like, my goal that year was to start every game, even though they just drafted a guy to replace me. And I started every game that year.
Yep.
And I think Aaron Rodgers is a little bit in that boat. The Packers drafted Jordan Love, frankly, because Aaron Rodgers had been kind of an average quarterback the two previous years. It was as simple as that. He goes on and has the best season of his career in a lot of respects.
Yep.
And I think that I doubt he's really admitted to himself that at the very least that extra motivation helped. It was probably – it was other things too. It was his second year being in LaFleur's system and all of that. But a little bit of extra motivation is never a bad thing, especially when it comes with a chip on your shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Wednesday. No question about that. John McClain jumps in with us at the top of the hour. So, Seth, the question now becomes – because I don't think – any of us saw this coming with Aaron Rodgers. I don't think any of us saw this coming with Deshaun Watson, the trade demand with Deshaun Watson. I think we understand Watson's trade demand. I think people maybe understand, with Aaron Rodgers, I don't know that we've got the full picture on Rodgers. Bottom line is, 6 months ago, if someone had said to you that Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers are both going to be demanding trades this summer, you would have said, what are you talking? Or maybe 7 or 8 months ago, because it's been a while with Deshaun. You would have said, what are you talking about? They're demanding trades. Deshaun just got paid and Aaron Rodgers won the MVP. What are you talking about? Who are the next quarterbacks that could pull what might be becoming a trend at some point where we get, I mean, Russell Wilson tried to do it with Seattle too, to some degree this offseason. If this becomes a trend, who do we think the quarterbacks are in the 2022 offseason that are next year's Rodgers and Watsons?
It's hard to say. I don't think it's
they're all going to sound crazy because Watson and Rodgers would have sounded crazy a year ago.
Okay, because there's several candidates, especially guys that maybe are entering that, they're in that third year where now all of a sudden the NFL wants to pay guys like Jared Goff after they've had three solid years or what have you.
That's right.
So those guys, like if it's Baker Mayfield or maybe Joe Burrow a couple years down the line, I don't think those guys are the same caliber. Maybe they will be by, you know, I don't think, maybe Joe Burrow will be by then or something because the Bengals are cheap too. But I think the guy who's already done it is Russell Wilson, who's hinted at it. But I don't think he's got the intestinal fortitude to do it. He's just like, he wants to try to play the bad boy and the hard ass, but Russell Wilson is a guy that would like decide he'd try something kinky in the bedroom, but then yell out the safe word as soon as he caught sight of leather. You know, like poor Sierra tries to get a little kinky and Russell's like, oh dear, no, I respect you too much. Those names. He'll try to be badass, but he's gonna pull. Maybe that's not the right term. He'll pull back at the right moment.
I think what we learned there is that leather is your apparatus of choice when it comes to stuff like that. We learned more about Seth Payne in those 15 seconds.
No, it's not by a long shot. I'm far too sweaty a person to bring leather anywhere. it's like spraying down a horse after a long, hard ride.
I think Joe Burrow is an interesting one. And Joe Burrow, it wouldn't be next year that he did it. This was his rookie year this past year. But keep an eye on that one. Couldn't you see Joe Burrow pulling a Deshaun Watson type situation where he looks around and says, these guys don't know what the hell they're doing here? You know?
You know why it would be especially like a Deshaun Watson situation?
Why is that?
Because Joe Burrow couldn't stop crying about how much he loves Ohio and helping the people of Ohio.
Oh, that's
at
true.
His Heisman Trophy
that's
ceremony.
That's true, yeah.
Remember, you and I were at a Rockets game with Wallace Marsh, and I looked up at the screen, and I'm like, oh my gosh, did Joe Burrow win the Heisman, or did he just find out that his house had burned down?
That's right.
There's a weepy moment up there.
He was very
emotional. For Joe Burrow, it would be a little bit extra. It would be like LeBron James forsaking Ohio, or perhaps like when Deshaun Watson was crying about the McNair family giving him all that money and how much he loved the McNairs and everything.
Yep,
and then a few months later, boom, gone.
Making Houston the next cheesesteak mecca of the world. And how's that going right now?
Oh, Baker Mayfield. The one thing with Baker Mayfield,
okay,
I think that John McClain brought this up, and I've been thinking about it a lot since when we were talking about both Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen. Mm-hmm. That sometimes you gotta look above and beyond the statistics with those guys because playing in those weather conditions is not conducive to having great stats as a quarterback.
Right.
You know, it'd be like if Andrew Luck had played outside instead of indoors in Indiana, what would it have looked like? Maybe a little bit different. So maybe the play for the Browns might be like, well, look, I mean, you're not a league leader in touchdowns or anything. And Baker Mayfield might be saying like, yeah, because we play in sleet storms all the time and we got to run heavy offense, but we're winning football games.
Right. It's like going to arbitration with a baseball player and saying, well, you're not hitting 45 home runs. And it's like, well, we play in a cavern. We play in the biggest ballpark in the league.
Yeah.
And you got to take that stuff. That's a good point. You got to take that stuff into account. All right. Let's do some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Astros win last night 9-3 over the Cleveland Indians. They go for the sweep tonight. Lance McCullers on the mound. The big story last night was Jose Altuve's 10th anniversary in the major leagues, the 10-year anniversary. Boy, it's been 10 years since Jose Altuve debuted is a Houston Astro, and he has put together thus far 10 Hall of Fame years in my and many other people's opinion. Jose Altuve said last night, I just tried to approach it like any other day.
I went out there today and tried to play the same way I always play, given everything I have. And obviously I had a good game. And in the end, what it matters, what it makes the day even better is that we won the game. And
all right, so classic Altuve. We won the game. You know, he's more focused on the W, at least outwardly more focused on the W.
Before the game, you know, he was asked about proving people wrong, and he said, I like to prove people right.
Yeah.
So, in terms of people that supported him or gave him a chance and all of that stuff, or gave him a contract, that was really cool. It's, again, if there's one thing I'd like to accomplish on this earth, Sean, over the course of my life, I mean, you know, like, there's some genuinely noble things I'd like to do, but sure. In the sports world, at least, I'd like to at least be part of the committee of exonerating Jose Altuve and at least setting the record straight about the cheating scandal with Jose Altuve. I think we're making headway. I think we're making progress. I listened to the Indians broadcast for a while last night, and the broadcasters were actually talking about how they don't hold it against Jose Altuve at all, that a lot of people think he didn't have anything to do with it, that his only guilt was in, you know, not putting an end to it, which and all that stuff. So, because he's that good a person. Colin McHugh last night tweeted out that if you don't like Jose Altuve, then the problem's with you.
I totally agree with that. I 100% agree with that. He's my favorite Houston athlete right now. He might be my favorite Houston athlete of all time. I think he's the greatest Astro of all time. And, Seth, I'm glad you brought that up. Being part of the committee to exonerate him from any of the sign-stealing stuff, because I will say this show, Payne and Pendergast, has been steadfast since the revelation that there even existed a sign-stealing scandal, that the one thing we want to make sure of is that Jose Altuve does not get stained. But this is not something where we're bringing this up because it was his 10-year anniversary last night. You and I, from jump with the sign-stealing, have said, take anybody but Jose Altuve. Take them all! But don't, like Tim McGraw said, don't take the girl. Don't take Jose Altuve.
Sean, I'll go back to, you know what, the quickest and smartest response I've yet to hear about Altuve in all of this was when Brandi Payne first learned about this. The very first thing she said to me was, well, Altuve swings at everything. There's no way. Like, it's just, there's no way. There's no way. He swings at everything.
Jeez.
It's not, of all people, like, that's the last person on earth that there'd be any evidence that he was actually taking advanced knowledge of pitches.
He walks through life with an 0-2 count. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he does. It's like he's always down 0-2. And that, again, is why I'm so angry with myself that I angered Brandi Payne and all this with even debating Altuve being in the circle of trust yesterday. That's a great take by her. It's a really good take.
Oh, and that was years ago. Well, I guess a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Boy, I mean, and that's why it's so convenient that the show is named Payne and Pendergast. If something ever happened to you, we could slide Brandi into this show and not skip a beat.
Nah, I don't know about that.
Okay.
A lot of people can do it for a few minutes. Do it for 4 hours.
There you
we'll
go.
See that.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm going to let you deal with that take on Brandy's chops right
You hear
now.
Me, Brandi?
I was just going to say, there I go, setting you up for failure again, Seth.
I'll tell you one thing. I couldn't coach a girls' basketball team.
there you go.
Yeah, there's plenty of things she does that I can't do.
Roller derby, all of it, absolutely. Yeah. By the way, here's Dusty Baker on what it's been like to manage Jose Altuve the last two seasons.
Yeah, watch him every day to really appreciate him and just the things that he does. He's a quality person, great teammate, and you know, everybody respects him, and you know, he's a quiet leader, you know, on this team. He's a guy that boy, I mean, his stats don't really speak the total justice for, you know, what he means to this team, what he means to this town.
Yeah, no question. Hopefully a career Astro, Jose Altuve. Happy anniversary, Jose Altuve. Yesterday, 10 years in the major leagues with the Houston Astros. Meanwhile, as we shift gears and headlines over the NBA, we have a new NBA champion, and their name is the Milwaukee Bucks. And the name of the MVP of the finals is Giannis Antetokounmpo, who had one of the greatest closeout performances in a series in the history of the league last night, Seth. 50 points. And what made it noteworthy is that the one Achilles heel that Giannis has shown in this postseason is that if you put him at the free throw line, he is a circus. Like, he is if you're a Bucks fan, it's tough. It's been tough to watch him shoot free throws. He missed one free throw last night. He made, I think he was 16 of 17 from the line, something like that, some ridiculous number. He was great, and a lot of them were down the stretch when they needed him to make those free throws to hold the Phoenix Suns at bay. But the Bucks close out the Suns in six last night.
I had a cordial conversation with my 9-year-old nephew this weekend, who's a big Giannis fan. And he gave the ages-old excuse now of his hands are too large for the ball, that's why he can't shoot free throws. And I said, hey, listen, bud, I've been through it. I've been through it with Dwight Howard. I've seen it with Shaq.
Yeah.
It's like, it doesn't measure up. There's lots of point guards with freakishly big hands who do just fine shooting free throws. So I didn't tell that to him. I'll wait until he's like 11 or 12 in sports arguments.
Here's what I like about the Milwaukee Bucks winning the championship, Seth. And I guess you probably could have said this about the Phoenix Suns too, either of these teams. They're not super teams. You know what I mean? This isn't LeBron ganging up with two of his buddies or Kevin Durant going and joining a 73-win team with the Golden State Warriors. We've lived the last decade in the era of the gang up. You know what I mean? And Giannis was drafted in the teens, you know, 13th or 15th overall back in 2013. Chris Middleton is a guy who was a second-round pick who has developed into an all-star. And by the way, kudos to Chris Middleton, who made a ton of big plays, not only in this series, but had a ton of big games throughout this postseason. He won some games for the Bucks when Giannis wasn't Giannis, or when Giannis was out. You know, Giannis missed some time with that knee injury. So kudos to Chris Middleton. And then they made a big sort of all-in move to get Drew Holiday by trading a bunch of first-round picks, and it ended up working out for them. So I like that. I like that this wasn't a situation where it feels like a manipulated sort of team, like a lot of these LeBron and Kevin Durant teams have been.
You know, I think, Sean, that there have been in the last decades, because you said the last decade, I think there have been plenty of quote-unquote homegrown teams or more organically grown teams in the last decade. I mean, I'll go back to the Spurs in 2014.
2014, Spurs.
The Warriors pre-Kevin Durant
were homegrown. Yep.
A real and extremely homegrown.
Yep.
Like, not even, you know, not top lottery pick guys either or anything.
Yep.
And then you have the Raptors, which they added Kawhi, but it wasn't a super team by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
And it wasn't like Kawhi didn't engineer his way onto the Raptors. I think the difference is that with all the other super teams do win, it's just so overpowering.
Yeah.
And the storylines are all the same. Like, it's been the same LeBron storyline for going on 5, 6, 7 seasons now. And then if you want to extend it further back to Miami Heat, that's the part that overpowers everything.
Yeah, and I guess, man, I might have to go back and listen to what I said when those other teams that you brought up, and those are all great examples, when they won, is that I might have been happy for those same reasons that those teams won. I'm just kind of anti-super team, I guess. The one thing that those super teams have not won every championship in this decade, but it has clearly not stopped star players from wanting to go gang up with other star players to put themselves in the HOV lane to get a championship. So I guess, you're right. This Bucks thing, maybe it's not totally unique, but I'm glad that it played out this way. And I'd probably be saying the same thing if the Suns had won it. They weren't a super team by any means. They were very homegrown, other than the Chris Paul trade, which was sort of their version of the Drew Holiday trade and all this, so that the Milwaukee Bucks are your NBA champion.
You know what I think, Sean, more than anything, and maybe perhaps the most encouraging thing about it in terms of, I don't know, just long-term relevance of the NBA or whether you get into the NBA, it's the fact that there isn't an NBA player in the league who looks at Milwaukee as a destination.
That's right.
You know, like,
that's a good way to put it, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, two of the last three champions have been non-destination cities between Toronto and Milwaukee.
Yep.
Although, Toronto, freaking underrated city. You can have a good time in Toronto, everybody.
Yeah, and I think NBA players know that, too. They might agree with you. I hear there's a good nightlife there in Toronto. Next headline, before we get to John McClain here at the top of the hour, just some audio here. Seth, I'm going to play some audio from a Deion Sanders press conference yesterday. Deion Sanders, who is, for those who don't know, Deion Sanders has gotten into the coaching game. If you remember, there were rumors when the Florida State job opened up that Deion Sanders wanted the Florida State job. He's going to have to cut his teeth on the FCS level first. He's the head coach at Jackson State, which is probably best known for being Walter Payton's alma mater. Deion Sanders.
They were 4-3 this spring, I believe.
Yep.
And, yep.
So they had their swag.
So his first season, first record, first season is a winning record.
Winning record for Deion Sanders. So they had their SWAC media day yesterday. These FCS schools are having to turn right around and play football again with just a couple of month layoff here. They had SWAC media day yesterday, and Deion Sanders didn't even get asked a question. He didn't let the reporter get out of the starting gate with his question. We'll let you hear this. The reporter's name is Nick Suss of the Mississippi Clarion Ledger. Here was the exchange between Suss and Primetime.
Hey, Deion, I was just wondering if you could...
Oh, let's back up a little bit. You don't call Nick Saban Nick. Don't call me Deion. Okay?
I call Nick Saban Nick.
No, you don't. That's a lie. If you call Nick Nick, you know you get cussed out on the spot. So don't do that to me. Treat me like Nick.
Okay, Deion.
So he called him Deion again. Kind of pulled a Jim Rome there. I bet you're not going to call me Chris
Everett
again.
Yeah, except he used his actual name.
right. Deion, what you didn't see there, unless you have, if you've seen the video, then you've seen Deion, when he called him Deion again, he up and left the Zoom call. Deion Sanders did. He walked out.
He did.
That was it.
A couple issues here that I have with Deion Sanders. One is, who, by the way, they lost. They won their last game 2-0. So that is a defensive effort. Their last game this season was won 2-0 against Alcorn State.
2-0.
Two to nothing. Yeah, they opened up. Alcorn, they opened up with a 3-game win streak. Then they lost 3 in a row. And then they won their final game 2-0. That's a rare football score.
We need to go look at the weather report for that game.
Yeah,
I feel like that was played in a hurricane or something.
So. Okay, two things. One, people do call Nick Saban Nick.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about, Deion? I think Deion got confused because remember that really annoying writer who was trying to kiss ass last year wrote a story about how Nick Saban should only be addressed as Coach Saban because he is apparently like such a lofty human being and individual that you should set him apart from other individuals and human beings because he's accomplished so much. Yeah, guys, people, reporters do call Nick Saban Nick. So Deion is just flat out wrong there. I don't think he was lying per se. I think he's just confused. And two, no matter what you've accomplished in life, which Deion Sanders has accomplished a whole lot as a football player and as a broadcaster, but he's new to the coaching realm.
Right.
So you can't compare yourself and demand equal fictitious treatment as Nick Saban.
That's a good way to put it.
When you have not, you've got 1-4-3 season at Alcorn State and whatever you did at your preparatory academy back in Dallas. Like, what the hell are you doing? You're demanding to be treated better than Nick Saban is actually treated in real life based on your 1-4-3 season at Alcorn State.
I demand equal fabricated treatment now. All right.
I'm going to go into the front. I'm going to go into our boss's office after the show and be like, listen, I demand that you fly me first class every weekend to the destination of my choice the same way you do for that Pendergast character.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, I don't do that. Oh, yes, you do. You're lying. Oh, yes, you do.
Yeah. Armin, if you're listening, keep flying me places first class. Seth doesn't know that that actually happens.
You know what that's based on? Was it Trent Dilfer that reportedly, supposedly demanded a private jet to get to his gigs?
Because that's
what Kirk Herbstreit got.
I think it was.
So ESPN was like, how about we just fire you instead?
How about you're not Kirk Herbstreit?
It's like Kirk Herbstreit's doing a college game and then going and doing an NFL game right after. No, he's doing college game day.
Yeah.
And then going and doing a college broadcast right afterwards. And he's like by far their biggest star on college football. Yeah, we'll give him a private jet. You're Trent freaking Dilfer.
That's right. Get back to your private coaching gig.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
Price and coverage match limited by state law.